Welcome. This is Sherilyn Parsons, founder and director of the Bay Area Book Festival. Enjoy the conversation.
Welcome to Queer Poetics. Take a seat if you haven't. I think there's a couple extra seats up front. If there's an empty seat next to you, can you just raise your hand so people can find seats? Thanks. I'm Ari Banyas. I'm a poet, and I'm so excited to be here with Franny, Tommy, Sam, and Brenda, and all of you. Thank you to Rachel and Claire for inviting me to moderate. Before we begin, I just going to make a few announcements and reminders, and then introduce everyone, and we'll get started. So please silence phones if you have not done that already. And yeah, thank you for being here. a few things also, there'll be time for questions at the end, so just save your questions. And after this session, everyone here is gonna go sign books at the table outside in the courtyard. So if you have questions or wanna chat with any of the poets, please do that there. So, queer poetics. What might a poetics of queerness look like, feel like, sound like? What shapes does queerness take in language? What worlds does it make or unmake? Today we'll hear from four poets whose work embodies queer approaches to living in and thinking through gender, race, feminist, kinship, faggotry, Asian Americanness, indigeneity, definitions of the human, pop culture, environmental collapse, technology, grief, how to cruise and heal and desire and fight and reimagine the present. In distinct ways, each poet sitting next to me here is considering queer pasts, writing from the present afterlives of colonial expansion and capitalist violence, and plotting queer futures. Each of these poets is also working defiantly and playfully in form and genre. If you don't already know their work, you will get to hear that. Collectively running through this body of work is science fiction, clinical interview, ode, elegy that doubles as self and social critique, one-night stands, LTRs, parenthood, a glossary that's a graphic table, sonnets, snarky asides, case studies, a 10-act play, stream of consciousness without one single period. I think I'm right about that. A museum.
There was one?
Okay, I missed it. I must have blinked. A museum and sex. So, I'm just going to introduce these four fabulous poets by reading their bios, and then we'll get to hear their work, and then we'll chat. So I'm just going to read their bios straight through and in the order that they will read, which is not the order that they're sitting in. And then they'll read. So Franny Choi is the author of two poetry collections, Soft Science, which just came out with Alice James Books, and Floating Brilliant Gone, as well as a chapbook, Death by Sex Machine. Her poems have appeared in Poetry Magazine, Paris Review, American Poetry Review, and elsewhere. She's a Kundiman Fellow, senior news editor for Hyphen, co-host of the podcast VS, and member of the Dark Noise Collective. She lives in Hamtramck, Michigan, and teaches poetry through Inside Out Literary Arts in Detroit. She is an incoming Boland Fellow at Williams College. Tommy Teebs Pico is the author of the books IRL, winner of the 2017 Brooklyn Library Literary Prize and a finalist for the 2018 Kate Tufts Discovery Award, Nature Poem from 2017, winner of a 2018 American Book Award and finalist for the 2018 Lambda Literary Award, Junk, his newest, from Tin House, and then Feed, forthcoming in 2019 from Tin House, and the zine series Hey Teebs. He won a 2018 Whiting Award, and he's been profiled in Time Out New York, The New York Times, and The New Yorker. Originally from the Viejas Indian Reservation of the Kumeyaay Nation, he now splits his time between L.A. and Brooklyn. He co-curates the reading series Poets with Attitude with Morgan Parker at the Ace Hotel, co-hosts the podcast Food for Thought, and is a contributing editor at Literary Hub. Sam Sachs is a queer Jewish writer and educator. The author of Madness, winner of the National Poetry Series, and Bury It, winner of the James Laughlin Award from the Academy of American Poets. He's the two-time Bay Area Grand Slam champion, with poems published in the New York Times, Poetry Magazine, and BuzzFeed. He's the poetry editor at Boat Press, a 2018 Ruth Lilly and Dorothy Sargent Fellow from the Poetry Foundation, and currently a Wallace Stegner Fellow at Stanford. And last but not least, Brenda Shaughnessy was born in Okinawa and raised in Southern California. She's the author of 5 poetry collections, most recently The Octopus Museum, 2019, Knopf. 2012's Our Andromeda was a New York Times 100 notable book, a finalist for the Griffin International Prize and the Kingsley Tufts Prize. She's the recipient of a 2018 Literature Award from the American Academy of Arts and Letters and a 2013 Guggenheim Foundation Fellowship. Her poems have appeared in Best American Poetry, The Nation, The New Yorker, Paris Review, Poetry Magazine, The Yale Review, and elsewhere. Silence those cell phones. She is currently writing an opera libretto for the composer Paola Prestini, commissioned by the Atlanta Opera. She is associate professor of English and creative writing at Rutgers University, Newark, and lives in Verona, New Jersey. Please join me in welcoming these 4 poets. And we'll start with Franny.
Hi, everyone. Can folks hear me decently? All right, there's some feedback, but we'll see. We'll make it work. I'm going to read a few poems from my new book. At the center of the book is this figure of the cyborg, which, you know, you may be familiar with the way that people like Donna Haraway think about cyborgs. I personally have stronger allegiances to how folks like Banu Kapil think about cyborgs, but we can talk about that later. I'll start with, often I sort of like give an explanation of why the cyborg is the myth that I've sort of chosen to think about queer Asian American femme-ness. But I'll just like skip that for now and maybe you can fill in those blanks in your brain. Yes. Okay. This is called Shokushu Gokan for the cyborg soul. That's a word that means tentacle porn. If you don't know what tentacle porn is, then I would suggest that you Google it at a later time. When it's demon cephalopod versus schoolgirl, it should be obvious whose eyes to take. Nothing is more frightening than looking and loving what you see. Nothing is sexier than a rumor of shredding that you can Pornhub with just your saliva and thirsty nerves. I'm a net teeming with pervy fingers, reaching for anything that'll bite me back, any promise of stoppage. A cyborg woman touches herself for 3 reasons: to inspect the machinery for errors, to convince herself she is a mammal, to pull herself apart. Each tentacle of an octopus contains brain matter and, they say, a personality. Fun fact, all my children arms want to fuck each other. Okay, so I am both the woman holding the camera and the woman being opened by it. Nothing special about that. I am only a cuttlefish lying open-jawed under the sand, a squid flashing red as it pulls a fish girl into its beak. I am just trying to sleep, to feed, to fill myself and grow larger from it, or I am only trying to slither back into my first skin, or I am only trying to remember how it felt not to leak. I'm excited also to talk about cephalopod affect later, too, you know. This one is called It's All Fun and Games Until Someone Gains Consciousness. When the human lunges for my hand, my face becomes a perfect solid screen. The human professor shrugs. Oh, this is something that a professor did say to me. The human professor shrugs. I've been told it's not PC to say this anymore, but chrome exterior, stainless. I'm afraid I don't understand the question. One night I drank until my body was a claw machine, clumsy, animatronic. I floated overhead as it crashed against the windshield over and over. Two, the human poet finds a Chinese food menu, and it is hilarious. Chicken bones and iron plate, fried puns. I admit, I try to make smarter child say all sorts of stupid things. Do you want to suck my dick? Do you like to swallow? There are hundreds of videos of huskies on the internet saying I love you without meaning to. Moans warped by an anxious animal jaw. Hey Siri, do you want to get married? Tell me a joke. Okay, it didn't work good. Three, when I want to, once I did, recently I did that and Siri was like was there with a joke. Three, when I want to be loved, I leap onto the bus and boom out, how's it going? In line behind the Chinese family, I practice looking as bored as an American. How can you call her a minor character? She notices things. She knows the difference between the present and the past. Does this hat make me look inscrutable or just butch? When I smack my gum, it's to signal that I do perceive space and time. It's just, I'm kind of over it. Four, it's all circus smirkus until the dogs won't stay dogs. The only words I have are human words. The humans aren't afraid of their dolls waking up as long as we keep calling them daddy. I reach up inside myself, move my mouth. I make it do terrible things, terrible. The only teeth I have are human teeth, I remind him gently before opening his throat. Okay, now I'm going to read some a shortish crown of sonnets. Oh, as one hopes. About chat roulette. Do you guys remember chat roulette? Ooh, y'all are nasty. Anyway, it was a way that you could, I think it started as you could like randomly connect with like webcams, from anyone in the world, which I think started as like a fun way to like meet people. And then it just like, I think within 2 weeks it was just 100% dicks, you know? Chat roulette. To see, to come, I brought myself online. Oh, dirty church. Oh, two-way periscope, refectory for Earth's most skin-starved cocks. Oh, hungry sons of helicopter palms and hopeful carousel. Oh, Gatling spray of skin that charges forth from dim-lit shorts when I wave back, nod, yes, I'm here, I'm real, and shape myself a woman's shape, a girl's live-action hologram projected on their basement brains, my foul amygdala prince thirstings, desperate congregations, pink or blue-brown mammals begging for my face. Outside the frame, my eight eyes narrow. Yes, I nod, amen, I am your filthy god. I nod, amen, I am your filthy god, your predator elect. I'll wrap your mouths in silken O's around my phantom thumb. Now drink. I'll scrape the lonely from your teeth. Diffuse the ticking marrow in your pit, that clotted place you call a heart. I'll flash a blood-sloshed smile and whisper, do you want to marry it, to take me as your law? I'll make you liquid men. I'll watch you eat my image, icon, rumor of a god who wants you back, who wants to watch you dance your crooked dance, your sad attempts at flight. But stay down, insect, stay. Just send them here, your salt-licked gifts, to prove you know I'm real. These salt-logged gifts, they promise me I'm real. My body is its image here. My image, just an always dying thing, asking its own disgusting question. Yes, I do have bones. I gag on water. Yes, my blood eats air and makes a mess beneath my skin. And what do I consume? Whatever keeps me flesh. Tonight, a tide of faceless supplicants who call me by the name my mother made with mud blood and marrow, veins, vermilion, silk. They call me baby, call me vertebrate. They christen me with tongues against the glass. I drink and drink there, looking till I'm soaked. I drink and drown in want. I drink and choke. Two more. I drink and drown in want. I drink, I choke, just like a girl. Exactly like a girl who's come to rot, to retch, to cough it up, to drool mascara down her shaking chin. I am the kind of girl who looks for men to wipe away her face. I am the kind of girl to peel her skin and show the work of worms below. The kind to open up, I guess, in public, in the stocks. That's me, oh God, a trough for ants, a dirty plate, a sour yellow streak behind the fridge, chicken skin distending, sweat spots, milk. I wanted nothing, please. I didn't mean to end this way, a smear of gut and shell. Last one. To end this way, a smear of gut and shell against the bedroom wall, crushed by a thumb belonging to a man, a swatting fan in heat. Don't worry, that's not how I go. Look, even when I wanted it, I didn't always. Couldn't always bring myself to crack the shell, suck out the pearly meat, tie up what's left and feed it to my brood. Not skin, not God, not bones, my own or theirs. It was the web I wanted all along. A face to spin from air with spit and hands. A sticky picture, luring meals to leave untouched. To be a girl untouched, alive, who sees and comes, who brings herself online. Cool. Okay, I'll do one quickie to close out with. Thanks for listening to that. I've never read that those sonnets out loud before, so ooh boy. Okay, one last one, and I'll also say that it's like a wild fever dream come true to get to share space with these heroes. So boy, oh boy. Okay, the short one that I'll end with, it's called Solitude. I hope no one comes to my party, I said out loud, and I meant it. In the email, I tried to sound too busy to care, like I'm having too much sex to waste time on proper punctuation, pretending it's not the other way around. Thanks. Thank you, everyone. Laura Brown Lavoie convinced me to jump in the Narragansett Bay on my birthday, which is in February. There's no good word for the opposite of fire, for the ice's sear and split, how it beckons the blood toward what means to end it. Oh God, I gasped over and over as we stumbled through the snow back to the car, me and my burning legs. Now that's my kind of intimacy. Faceless, salty, no wondering how my jokes are going over. Just running straight toward warmth as my skin bursts open in shock.
Hello, what's up? Hi, I'm Tommy Teebs Pico, and I will be reading from my book, Junk. It's a breakup poem in couplets, amongst other things. Oh, they said go on for like 12 minutes, but I don't know how much I'm going to go on for, because this is like day 69 of a particularly grueling spring tour. But this is my last stop, so you know what? I'm going to give it all that I got. So, yeah, here we go. Junk. Frenching with a mouthful of M&Ms. I don't know if I feel polluted or into it. The lights go low across the multiplex, a temple of canoodling and junk food, a collision of corn dog bites and chunky salsa to achieve a spiritual escape velocity. Why am I in this cup holder? Because you're bubbly, dummy. But I feel squeeze cheese uneasy. You see, in faggot land, coupling is at best delicate, precarious, and rarefied. At worst, a snipe hunt. Love in the time of climate change. Should I be nervous? No, it's too dark in here for that. There's a light and a screen and our moon faces reflecting. Well, this is an epic, dummy. Get your muse. Hail Janet Jackson, patron saint of eternal utility but selective relevance. I whisper feedback, feedback into the bedding. Usually when you gag, it's because something needs to come out. So it strikes me as funny, ha-ha funny, to gag while trying to stuff someone's whole junk in. Everything that can cross, I am crossing. Eyes, arms, shoulders, back to bed. Come back here. The air is heavy feathers in midsummer, literally and metaphorically in my foul apartment above the chicken slaughterhouse where we wheeze awake. Your bangs look real perf and quaffed. And strangely, I smell like horror burgers and you smell like lavender doves and all the best stuff. You're so comforting, like getting fucked on an empty stomach. Funny, but a little obvious, like a wrecking ball factory going out of business. And I feel held up, like you're examining my x-rays and nothing's broken. I'm like, why does this meaty, yuppie man want me to wake up in his arms? But Janet says, leave your worries behind. I'm trying to close my eyes. I'm trying to close my eyes. I'm trying to close my shutter, your forehead against mine. Tectonic San Andreas in the West Village, karaoke, piano, gay bar, whatever. I can't close my eyes. I just spent $13 on this margarita. Black velvet is loud and extra theater kid in the world around us. This is where you come to lose yourself. This is where I feel extra jagged, junk, not immediately useful, but I'm still someone. I can't stop looking at people's junk generally, so you can imagine how hard it is at the gym. I try to keep eye contact with you, but your orbs, soft and breathless, glow their orb light all over me. We're seeing subarctic farming in Alaska for the first time. Green in the hazel country. That's what I call the color of your eyes. I'm a brick in stadium lights, like so fantastically broken, but I'm gummy peachy keen. Junk gets a bad rap because capitalism, but junk isn't garbage. It's not outlived its purpose. Junk awaits its next life. Google viral versus bacterial and then try to sleep. It is very hard. I had a tweet once called Netflix and Pills that went sort of viral, and you said you were in a viral video dancing on a patio with a group of gay norms. Of course. On Fire Island. Of course. In a thong. Of course. And it made me want to punch a pigeon. People buck like fuck when they feel their self-esteem is under siege. Shame is isolating. I write very specific baths. What kind of gray scrutiny do you cast into the mirror? And if being pinned down by light, the squirming. When I stare directly at you, you act like I spilled something and leap up as if to get a paper towel and hang in the kitchen, evading my peepers. Is it wrong to call your partner a mirror in the sense that when we are together, I'm with myself in a way I can't escape? We're buffering pretty hard all over each other at this point. The covers up to our shoulders, we lay in the couch bed of our preconceptions, separating. took us long fucking enough. Now I'm stupid and sugar-free and realizing the only thing harder than writing is quitting candy. And the only thing harder than quitting candy is walking all day and buttering to bed in my body. But now that I'm fully inhabiting my cement, I'm finding the sacral joy of thinking into my rib cage. Convention says a book should be this long, but I'm only interested in writing as long as you want to read in one sitting. My aura is a strawberry shortcake dessert bar and the popular American corn snack, Funyuns. My safe word, you know what? I saw on tour, I read this in Canada, and in Canada, they don't have Funyuns. I was like, I was expecting a laugh, and it was dead silent. I was like, Funyuns. They were like, no. And I was like, no, Funyuns, like fun onions. And they were like, no. Poppy Mary corn snack, Funyuns. My safe word is go to hell, Katy Perry. Pronounced catty. I'm writing a sitcom about butts and counting. It's called Number Two. The tagline is turn the other cheek. Most times I'm a maniac. Other times, losing an arm wrestling match. Protrude from the green and calling it bud. Sometimes you need to read something more than once. My joint is Mary Jane. The theme is harmony of a gradient. Let's hold hands and walk to the water taxi and match in tank tops, but we call the tank tops wedges. And the wedges are a chipwich and our cherry cokes are a summer afternoon where we can't do nothing but lean into the grass at the carousel park in Dumbo with the lap of the river and the dollhouse of Lower Manhattan face fucking us while we neck and later, Facebook. The days are burnt packets of fake sugar and faggot land, and Sundays are the blurry worst. I'm taking notes in therapy like, be more in the moment. Everyone, they say, is trying to quiet the buzz, but here in the white waves, in the ring of your absence, I chafe to chatter. I leap into a scream of swans rubbing their swan cocks against the water's ass. Starving junk in the sticky soda of my boy meat. Spit on that rock hard narrative. Make it glisten. Fuck. Oh, fuck. My head a rabid Sega frantic 16-bit divination. My hands huge Venn diagrams. The middle is where I miss you. Filling me. Honey, in the raw. It's odd to feel someone slip away. Drilling their junk inside you. The sky is still and shy and surfing. Newsflash, predictions are insecure. But here are the rainbow road's possible paths. Come, Delta. Choke my loneliness, Daddy. More graphics, more resolution, more jagged chin cliffs, more anarchist sex dolls, more jewel teeth, more tears on the pizza, more hungry boys somewhere in my noise machine. The fat junk wags against my throat. Junk is charming in the hollows. A dude leans into me like cigarettes, half asleep. You know how some people are workaholics? Well, I'm an alcoholic. Today's jaw, lick, click, clock, sops the syrup leaking from my pores. One more time, please. Can I please ride just one more time? I got the tightest, pinkest purse. Sorry, clutch. Let's play a game called Sociopath or Gay Man. Very hard. Let's bottomless brunch. Let's petal bagel with strawberry tofu cream cheese, toasted snickerdoodle smoothie, fuchsia puree, adrenaline whole bellinis. I'll eat it, Daddy. Baby, I'm the opposite of a foodie. I'm like a junkie. Thanks.
Hi.
What a gift it is to read with some of my most favorite writers. Brenda, who I've been reading for so long and who blurbed my first book. Franny, who's written responsible for every good poem I've ever written. Tommy, who I just learned I watched video poems of from 2010. And Ari, who's a genius and also my neighbor. Okay, my name is Sam. I'm going to read for a minute. I was just telling Tommy that my brother had twins in... And the ungendered term for twins is nibblings. And I have kind of mixed feelings about progeneration in general and like reproduction. But, you know, now that I've seen them, I'm like, oh, you know, I feel this sort of like biological imperative. And I was writing the sequence of poems for them. And my brother was like, said something to me that spurred this next poem. It's called "For My Nibblings in Anticipation of Their Birth." My brother, knowing my work well, asked I not include any references to semen in the throat in this poem I am writing you. So I shan't. Instead, semen in the books. Semen in the leaves. Semen in the ground that grows the semen trees, also known as the calorie pear. Semen in the boat that carried our family here. Semen in the waters where we left our dead. Semen in the meadows where we buried and bled. Semen in the light streaming through the stained glass of our synagogue. The image depicting an ark in an ocean of semen. Gossamer semen. Octopus semen. Garden of semen. There are so many words for you children, and none of them are dirty, though not all of them are yours. Now, as you eat what your mother eats, her fear is yours as you enter this world, torn and thrown to birds, but still the light is thick in the trees. The calorie pears are loud this season, and my throat is bright with flowers for you both. Such beautiful flowers. I hardly have the words.
It's addicting, the care that we have for children. That's why you gotta be critical of it. That was sort of all I had planned. What else? I think I should probably try to read something out of this book. This book just came out, and I've never read this, but I've been reading Aaron Smith's new book, which is killer. And so this is a sequence about, you know, being a hoe, and then being like, oh, you know, and then aging out of it, and then looking back at one's life. It's kind of, and it's like in fragments, so every time I lift my hand, can y'all just go, whoop? Excellent, yeah, whenever you want. It's called "I Want So Desperately to Be Finished with Desire," which is that Aaron Smith line, yeah. After all my labor, pleasure arrives, inelegant as ever. Secondhand chandelier, onion sound, the gutter that grunts at you when you spit in its mouth. Even with my hand inside him, he's somewhere else. The shipwreck leaves the paired animal bodies floating and bloated with salt. Everyone drags all their past lovers into bed, all their past beds and public toilets and foil pipes and park benches and deadbolts and dead. My hand's inside him and he's with someone else, gone men breathing, gone breath on his neck. The brain is a maniac organ, it puppets me. I follow a man off the subway into Queens and look up to see my life had passed. Each text message I send is a tongue pushing through the body of the phone till it laps at a strained pair of eyes. My man wakes up next to me and recoils at my hardness gathered at his thigh. Two primates reach between each other's legs and get to work. One throws his head back to stare down God while the other wants to leave. I press my naked shape against aquarium glass and let the squid swarm my deformed organ. They're amazed how it fans out like a sibling, brethren and recognition. Every old wound dressed in drag and daggers, child of the invert and sodomite, of the lecher in her leper print gown, of the leper bell, its leper sound. My thirst is basic, easily quenched. Water will do. I used to be wild,
unripe fruit. I'd lash myself to any new mast while some man stared strange as I strained and galloped terribly against his sound.
Thanks, y'all. Yeah, you know, trying to do as many poems with squid in them to be in this larger conversation we're having. This one poem I was hoping... Oh, yeah, here it is. Okay. I was just on at a panel about Adrienne Rich, and we didn't get to talk about any of her. And I wasn't on it. I was listening and waiting for the sort of conversation around anti-Zionism, but it didn't happen, so I'll try to bring it here, which is also, queer poetics. It's called Everyone's an Expert at Something. The more I learn, the more I learn, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. To someone who doesn't care a fig for poetry, they'd likely think I knew a lot. Yet in most bookshops, I'm lost. Shelves heavy with the bodies of forgotten writers. It's relative. A president can say audacity, or a president can say sad, and both eat the same cured meat of empire. When I say I carry my people inside me, I don't mean a country. The star that hangs from my neck is simply a way of saying Israel is not a physical place, but can be written down and carried anywhere, says my people are most beautiful when moving, when movement, when our only state is the liquid state of water, is adapting to its container. Homeland sometimes just means what books you've read, what stories you've spread with your sneakers. My people, any place you've lived long enough to build bombs is a place you've lived too long. My friends, the only thing I know for sure is the missiles on television are only beautiful if you've never known suffering. My friends, the only country I'll ever pledge my allegiance to is your music, is under investigation for treason. Oh, thanks for the snaps. You got it. I love it as an interactive gesture. So, I've been thinking, I have this poem on bottom poetics, but I didn't bring it. So I'll just read a sonnet about the cock. Has anyone been to the cock?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Existentially.
Okay, three of us. It's a sex club in New York. This is a sonnet that borrows a line from Martina Spada. Okay, the cock. You can't spell basement without semen. Or I suppose you could, but then it would just read bat. Somewhere south on 2nd Avenue, a staircase you pay $10 to descend onto a dance floor, though more a field of men who've already removed their heads so as to blend into the eternal body, which is always loosening and welcoming fluids. What becomes of the indivisible soul in basements such as this? Here, where the spirit is passed around as a yawn, a religion, soul, I say, welcoming someone me yet not into this rented and temporary skin, when an oddly cold erection nuzzles its wet nose into my palm like an elderly dog. In that oldest story, the three-headed dog guards the gate to the world of the dead. In this underworld, the living. Yeah, it's a complicated space. Okay, I have time for maybe two more poems. Yeah. Okay, excellent. I should read something else from this book.
Yeah.
But is any of it quite faggy enough? Yeah. Oh, thank you. I feel held. Yeah, this is another like Jewy poem. It's called Treif. I learned which is like unclean and newly kosher. But I learned the meaning of the word fagala, which is faggot, but its origin, and so I was like, that's gotta be a poem. Alright. Fagala is Yiddish for the way I walk into a room. Fagala, the anglicized spelling of angel, fallen into the dark earth pits of fashion. Fagala from the German Vogelein meaning little bird. Little bird, where do you flame from? Where do you bird from, little German flame, little singlet split for entry, little finger slipped into the mouth, staring hard across the bare wet bar, little bear in his arrogant leather harness, his broad American faith. K Carry me with you across the fleshless threshold, how an old woman carries her language, across an ocean so vast, so many fathoms deep, one might imagine all life springing from the wet slit of its shoreline. Sure, I've memorized every word for faggot, and nearly all their origins are plural and bound together with twine, little string corset wrapped around my brother's thigh. Little horses wild at the bit to be ridden, little films where the animals are let out, but only at night. Sure, I've eaten directly from the hand of a man who taught me the simplest words, gestures of thirst and begging. Sure, I was hatched into a world that expected me to fly straight into power lines, but see how hideous hearse shined my feathers. See my wings spread like a dead book of legs. See my brutal beak seed thief in the club light. My first name was Flame, and I drew moths and mouths alike. Fagala, as in son of the first preacher with gills, as in the flood that began and refused to quench, as in when I was a child, I killed a bird, a sparrow, I think, with my bare hands so it wouldn't go on suffering. It was sick. Give me your hands. Hold my head between them, how you'd hold a bag writhing with birds, a pillowcase thick with lights, two grown boys in gowns howling, a cold mud village consumed by flames, a cage door opening, a blade, a blade, a blaze. Cool, thanks. And then let me just hop into this last one real quick so I don't go over time. But my new book's not about pigs. I'm writing another book about pigs. And so this is an ode to Miss Piggy. Ah! The microphone had an adequate response. Okay, Miss Piggy. Oh, great porcine drag queen. You who grew erudite in the slaughterhouse shadow. Eyelashes like black swords teased up to challenge heaven. Eternal in your powdered foundation, refusing every day the knife's inevitable and unkosher end. Besnouted fount of youth, seminal queer iconoclast, pearls to bed, pearls in the junkyard, pearls on television, diva of late night of talk shows and prime time, door kicker for the non-conventional romance, shown us how to love across identities arbitrary as phylum and species. Bless that impossible coupling, how you took an entire frog inside you and remained the same bad pig. Who'd karate chop anyone dumb enough to disrespect? Let's get a collective hi-ya on three. One, two, three. What little faggot wouldn't look on you and be seen or saved or salved? You who never questioned you're destined for stardom. Oh, miss. Oh, great swine demimonde. Oh, dame pig. I'm yours till I end. You, my religion. How I understand all us now. We are ourselves and the hand inside that guides us. We who are given voice by the same spirit that gives voice to everything we have ever loved. Well, thanks, guys.
I swear, if there's a future, if we have a future, it's you. It's you. It's you. All three of you. And you too, Ari. Seriously. Seriously. All right. So we're not going to survive unless we do something about capitalism. And we're not really doing anything about capitalism, are we? This is our beloved infinite crapulence. In Indiana, in the era of hell wealth, way past deadline, someone on the account is sweating it, making metaphor from what is already a stretch. And because he wants to go home to his farm fresh slowpoke foam grown cold, we are all eventually diagnosed with winter and treated to this marketing copy off a tube of cream, undry your skin, or a rainforest for your face. I bought it. It seemed fresh and felt organic, and like it would at least wetten me skin-wise. I can't feel my old ambition to be racked with anguish or to grow soft with loss. When I lose, I'm still so grateful. Does that make me a chump or a champ, eating victory muscles in the lamplight of my domestic tranquility? Gratitude often leaves me with nothing to say, as when I saw you in the toy store, I felt like a feral cat who knows only the dumpsters and the flu-scented sandboxes of now. Now that I'm happy, I suppose I have to break my own heart just to feel something. Another person with my same name goes around impersonating others. Now everyone thinks I'm the imposter. I want to tell her, you know, you think you know me. Sipping mahogany cider in the millionaire's billiards room. But there's such a thing as too much umami, and there's no way to rest forever and then go on. Someone once said, now that I'm happy, I suppose I have to break my own heart to feel something. I should remember that. I should stop praying to my dead self. I should pull out my earbuds and hear the world, my first love, my favorite store, without continually moving my oiled jaw hinge. I like a chemical mysticism performed with perfect innocence. The wet slit lit up and cut down the middle. A little spit, lip a little bit split. Love in the candle shop, wicked. Peeing into a plastic water bottle, wasteful. These are scents. As is, luck be a lady, so spend your whole social security check on lottery tickets, be a gentleman. I want to smell like ceramic wind in the canyon, a brittle lust, a red-headed remedy synonymous with flooding, weather vane rusted stuck, a stranger's phalanges, the south mouth, fiercely phlegm, fun old lady, so parachute, exclamation point. And now we eat, the eponymous eating. Don't want butter, don't want salt. Dinner is thinner, but it's not my fault. We're having fungal celebrity of beef cheeks tomorrow, so get yourself hungry. For lighter fare, I prefer the soapish fish, braised in its own frothing broth, served with an aromatic retraction of statements previously made in the shade of a giant, genetically muddled with fiddlehead fern, infused with expelled chipmunk breath. I love this local company, especially because for every order, and this is so cool, they make a tax-deductible contribution to honor and support the world-famous Pacific Garbage Patch in your name. So, this is Wellness Rituals. You never understood me until you watched me wash the inside of the well with clean well water and invisible soap which dissolves the dirt and then clumps up and floats to the surface, suddenly iridescent. I net up the greening lumps, skimming. I leave the net out to dry. Within hours, the lumps are coagulated and bacterial. Dirty heads striated with living question marks, leech pieces, worm eyes, segments of fertile sediment. Enough biomaterial to assemble themselves into flying animals, little glowing spitballs. They waver off into their new lives. I made them surely as I made my daughter without knowing how. I washed down the sides with sea sponge as far as my arms could go, then lowered myself in the bucket. Down there I used my feet. Scrubbed the stones and cracks of moss and slime and what else? Dead water, new algae, legs of things. I held my breath against the earth perfume in case it was infected and spread my legs to straddle the diameter, my toes clenched on wet grit, my own holes amphibian as ever. Where does my water come from? From myself, you know. I'm a self-cleaning animal, and my children were born glistening under all the soft trees, leaving, breathing. You understand me now. The well was always clean. I clean it anyhow. It's no cleaner now than it was, but I am. G-bread. One of my indulgences was going, do I like this poem? Okay. I don't know. Starting to wonder about myself. G-bread. One of my indulgences was going to the gingerbread house some evenings, sitting gingerly in a little gingerbread chair, to eat the best G-bread, for saturation and when I could splurge the money. I felt him one day peeking in the sugar-frosted windows, but of course he did not come in. Perhaps he was intimidated by how intimate the place is, too small to sit comfortably, really, or maybe by how good I smelled in it, the spice sweat sauna ripening me as a brown paper bag will sweeten out the mealiest pear. On religious days, of which there are many but few for me, I went to the temple of the three mouths. I fed all three what they were hungry for, which took some guesswork and often sketchy improvisations. Whatever the three mouths requested became a kind of omen for me. Mouth one, the mouth of physicality, was the easiest. Once it wanted peanut sauce, which made sense because it likes protein and viscosity, form and content. Mouth two twice puzzled me, once wanting a blue video and once wanting to lick my arm. This being the mouth of love, I wondered why it wanted such silly forms of it, but I could only guess that I came to it with deformed notions and therefore could only offer it debased versions of what I most wanted. Still, it made me sad. The third mouth I gave, whatever I could barely keep from gobbling up myself. Chocolate tomatoes and books I couldn't sleep for. Oils and petals and commotions I dreamt of on my luckiest nights. And the mouth would have none of it. I was refused every time. The mouth of abandonment. I thought this mouth meant something and then that something was in verse. I was always baffled. Until I could penetrate the mystery, make the third mouth desire what I have to give, I would continue my supplications at the temple. My religious days were generally those days when my own company turned against me, when I couldn't stand myself a minute longer. What my visits to the temple did to assuage this in-skin repulsion, I don't know, and it only half works. It was a form of religion, after all. But after I returned home, I felt a little relief, a snake in the middle of its shedding, knowing there was still this cylinder of self left. Have you ever, gone through your whole long, wild life and then, sat down to write a poem in the middle of it thinking, everything's new, everything's open, anything could happen, and you find yourself writing about, your first love? I'm just why? Why are you back? You're not back. I went through all that. I did all that work. Here it is. No traveler returns. I was like you once, a sealed plastic bag of water filters floating on the sea. I thought my numbers proved my time and space on Earth. I thought having children was a way of creating more love. I thought thoughts I was ashamed to speak in case they were what everyone already thought or in case they were unthinkable thoughts nobody would dare think, much less say, which would blow up the world everyone else had to live in if I said them. I muddled that distinction to extinction. Pure silence, not a piece of peace and a breathlessness, not of wonder, but black throat, choking on backwash. Once a wild, tentacled, screaming creature, every inch a kissed lip of a beloved place. True and relentless mind, all heart, if heart, is a dumb hope of reusable pump. What was it you said that made me think I was like you once? Remember the last terrifying moments? You clenched up and wanted me to be completely open. We'd broken up. Remember such terms, such luxury? We thought breaking up a kind of preservation. And to cut off circulation, decided to sever at the place where our hair had grown together. An axe, a pair of kitchen scissors. That rusty axe, fully fatigued, and scissors, which cut raw chicken bacteria into everything it touched. Nothing did the trick. To come apart, we'd have to come together. And so I tried to make you come. You said it was our last time, so you'd remember it. You cried out, then cried, and I hardened against you, then softened, then wished we could go back. Wanted to love you like before. Twisted myself like nobody's pile of wires. Did you try to make me come and I couldn't? Wouldn't? Or did I give you that and let you let me go? And there will be no other way to be once this way is gone. The last song on earth, the last jelly bean. Last because nobody wanted it or everybody sang it till the end. Once this day in November's over, never another. Each day nothing like the last, except it's the last, and that's new too. Each moment, broken glasses, a covered mirror, foxed. The waste stays in place. The rest disappears. The unrest, too. There's no way to follow my own mind. My own mind is not leading. I'm unleaded. I'm gasoline. I'm everything in between, this flame and that attracted wind. I forgot my glasses. How will we drink? Seeing isn't believing. If I believe, I see better with something I can so easily forget. And what if I can't forget? I forgot the heft and squirm of my own baby in my arms, in my own womb. I'll forget anything and call it an accident. Match to fuel and breathing it all in as if I'm living normally from day to re-registered day. Why is it, if I can only remember what I myself experienced, that I can also forget what I experienced? Who records the records and collects the recollections? I had that baby in my womb for 39 weeks, for 3/4 of a year, a full calendar minus summer, an unforgettable summer, each day fucking endless. Oh, I know all the numbers. Everything adds up. I've never seen my womb, but my doctor has. I never saw that doctor again. I'll end with a short one called Identity and Community, or There Is No I in C, which is a true story. I was in Hawaii, and I had moved heaven and earth to get to Hawaii. I was so desperate to get there. And then I stood there at the edge of the ocean, just afraid to go in the water. And I just thought, okay, I guess I'll write a poem instead. I don't want to be surrounded by people, or even one person. But I don't want to always be alone. The answer is to become my own pet, hungry for plenty in a plentiful place. There's no true solitude, only. At seaside, I have that familiar sense of being left out, too far to glean the secret, how go in. What an inhuman surface the sea has, always open. I'm too afraid to go in. I give no yes, full of shame, but refuse to litter ever. I pick myself up. Wind has power, sun has power. What's power's source? There's no privacy outside. We've invaded it. There's no life outside empire. All paradise is performance for people who pay. Perhaps I'm an invader and feel I haven't paid. What a waste to have lost everything in mind. Watching three mom-like women try to go in, I'm green. I want to join them. But they're not my women. I join them, apologizing. They splash away from me. They're their pod. People are alien. I'm an unknown story, erasing myself with seawater. There goes my honey and fog, my shoulders and legs. What could be queerer than this queer tug lust for what already is? Who already am, but other of it? Happens? That kind of desire anymore? Oh, I am that queer thing pulling and greener than the blue sea. I'm new with envy, beauty washing over itself. No reflection, no claim, nothing to see. If there's anything bluer than the ocean, it's greenness. It's turquoise blood mixing me. I was a woman alone in the sea. Don't tell anybody, I tell myself. Don't try to remember this. Don't document it. Remember, write down to not document it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for those beautiful readings. So I'm going to open up with a question, and then I think we'll have a little bit of time to hear from all of you, or some of you, actually. So, I mean, there's actually like a million things I want to ask you for, but I will start with this question of time, because I think there's something that all of you are doing with notions of time, thinking about elegy, thinking about past trauma, thinking about like formally the modulation of like the pace of a book-length poem, thinking about aftermaths of violence, thinking about the lunar calendar and like how you imagine life after the human. So is there something particularly queer about all of this? Like why this preoccupation with time? And maybe each of you could speak a little bit to, you know, sort of how you work with or think about time as poets. If that calls anything up.
Good question.
But I could just say some to start the conversation. I think there's something about like the inherited linear narrative that feels like heteropatriarchal. Mm-hmm. And so I think like anything, like I think what a poem offers us is the ability to bring history into the present where it already is, right? And like our medium of language is an inherited form. So I think like a poem is always contending with history and queering our sense of time and like, as far as like my particular, like, I think I try to write in like a sort of Jewish inherited literary tradition, yeah, that pulls stories as a way of making place, you know, right? Like we use inherited stories as a way of like being a countryless people or being in diaspora. And I think that like is an inherently queer notion as well. So I think anything that sort of like challenges or models had a queer time.
That's beautiful.
Time is gay, lol.
I mean, that's kind of nothing else to say, right? I mean, I do think that there's a besides the linearity and the heteropatriarchy, it just seems like there's a way of not wanting to be defined by time, its stupid ass markers, its expectation that you're supposed to be somehow somewhere in your life at a certain, you know, according to time. And I don't know how queer that is, but it feels deeply queer to me to be like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. That's like, why does that make, that makes no sense. That's the definition of life that's like clearly, I don't know, some brutal, icky president of something would come up with. You know, it doesn't seem like it's human at all. But then again, I've struggled with time. I feel like I struggle with time every single minute of every single day. Just even getting here, we're so happy to be here. And like, I was just like, I'm gonna fuck it up. I'm gonna like get on the BART too late. I know it. I mean, I'll get there early, but then I'll be too early. But then it's just, you can't get away from it. I don't know. I mean, the only way to sort of handle that is to sort of have a kind of a, I don't know, what is it? A camp approach to it, really, or sort of just try to, I don't know, prance through it or not take it seriously or something. But I feel quite, I don't know, weighed down by time in general.
I love everything that everyone's said so far. I mean, I also think that there's something about, I mean, I do now think that we're sort of trying to answer the question, like, what's so gay about time? Which is an incredible question. But my two cents would be, I mean, one thing is that, like, I think we all, or like most people have like a kind of like a baseline understanding of the reality that like the way that humans perceive time is not like, doesn't cover all of the ways that it works, right? Like, we all know that, like, things like, you know, like time flies sometimes or whatever. We all know that, like, space-time is like, a concept. We know about, like, the possibility of alternate universes, et cetera. Like, these are all things that we might know, but like, it's like, much easier to kind of, like, approach time as we experience it, being like linear and in one direction and like finite and like not like part of like a material, right? And I think that sort of like, underlying knowledge that things are like spookier than they seem to be feels to me like something that's important for me as a writer when I'm approaching poems, you know, like that, that like the way the sentence is supposed to work, that there are like many other possibilities of writing that aside from the ones that like have been passed down to us. And like to tap into like what those other spooky possibilities might be is like a way of getting closer to like what my own voice actually is, right? Or like what the truth might actually be. I don't know. Now I'm on this like tip of thinking about like alternate universes, like the concept of that as being like you know, like the idea that there's like a million versions of the thing that you see in front of you as like the, this is this universe simply in drag is a different universe, right? But also that sort of like possibility of multiplicity existing on the level of the word as well is important to me, right? For like the word to be able to shapeshift and have like, and to look at it and know that it's one of like an infinite number of possibilities for things that might take its place or like resonate. Yeah.
And I think all of you are actually working with that in your work. Like, I think about the like opening poem in your book. And I think about like both of the titles of your books and how there's all this meaning, these layers of meaning and multiplicity in them. I have so many more questions, but I actually want to give the audience also a chance to ask. So if anyone has a question for the poets, I want to just remind you to ask questions that are addressed to all four poets and also ask questions, not just make a statement.
Yes, make sure they're questions.
Yeah. Is anyone?
Hi.
Hi.
Great readings, everybody.
Thank you.
I was really delighted at how much aquatic life was in all of the poems.
Yeah.
Sea sponges and fish and octopuses and algae. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts that you wanted to riff on about aquatic life and maybe cephalopod affect. Thanks.
I mean, I wonder, because I feel like we're just fucking up so bad on land. You know, it sort of feels like this other, you know, we're going to fuck that up too, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the cephalopod, I identify most because it's, and I think most poets, because it's like a three-hearted thing with no spine. That's also like infinitely mutable and can like move, yeah. And so I sort of feel seen. And it also has like alien DNA, you know? So I'm like, that makes sense, yeah.
And its arms think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It has a decentralized nervous system, so its tentacles are actually part of its consciousness, which is hot.
And they taste with their skin. That's just bananas. Now it's just become an octopus tribute panel. But.
Other questions in the audience?
Time is gay. The ocean is gay.
The sea is gay.
The sea is gay, for sure.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, for sure.
The
shit is gay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi. Brenda mentioned climate change before at the beginning. And I guess I've been like increasingly interested in like how climate change is affecting writers and affecting everyone. So if we could talk about that.
I mean, it's just affecting all of us, right? I think the big issue of like what can anyone do is really just such a big, you know, huge problematic thing to have in the air. Like, what can anyone do? Can one person do anything? And writers use our voices. That's what we know how. That's how we, you know, try to change things is through that one sort of vector. So that's. I don't really have much to say about climate change and myself as a writer because I'm just full of fear, you know, and I've always just written fear in my work. On the subject of alternate universes and parallel universes and all that stuff, I think that's a really interesting and exciting thing to think about, and I know that I'm attracted to it because of what, although it's very problematic when it comes to, like, trauma, right? I mean, yeah, what if there could be any infinite number of possible things that happened, then so why did that bad thing happen to me? Why did I get stuck in this one? And it's extremely, it's kind of like almost like a way, like an escape hatch to imagine many other possible ways. And I know I've indulged in it tremendously. And so indulging for me in, you know, what are some magical, fantastical ways to imagine us not completely just, you know, killing everything and everyone? You know, I just sort of, sometimes I feel extremely sad and down and angry that, like, all I can do is, like, use my stupid pen, you know, and just, like, you know, here I am sharpening my pencil again, because I do use pencils. here I am sharpening this pencil again for more, you know, pointless work. And then I come to a thing like this, and I'm like, it's not pointless. Mm. You know, it's communicating with community, and that's what has to happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
The apocalypse is gay.
Yeah. I love Joyelle McSweeney has a book on the necropastoral, right? And looking at the art, like the art form of the pastoral as like yoked to climate crisis and destruction and the destruction of the planet. So I think if that's like not in your work, then you're not, then you're like writing delusional work, you know, like you're not writing what you need to write. I also think like Robin Costa-Lewis in a podcast was talking about like the intention of making books. Cause like paper is, you know what I mean? Like, not necessarily renewable resource, right? And so like, to be very intentional with what your work is doing in the world. And I think like, species extinction maybe causes us to refocus that, right? Like, what's the intention of the work we're making? What's it doing in the world? What's the affect of it? And I think in general, mine is to like, thinking it's to like alleviate suffering for people, to like build community in the sort of like margins of crumbling dystopia, you know? So, yeah, that seems to be, like, my one hope. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I think we have time for
one more.
Did you have thoughts on climate destruction?
I mean, okay.
Oh, I mean, I guess if I'm going to say anything about climate change and how it's affecting my work, it's just that, like, that I think poets are good at thinking about grief and dread in ways besides nothing is possible, you know? And I just like hope that more of us continue to kind of harness that superpower of thinking about grief and dread in wider and more expansive ways. That's all.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
I guess then my question kind of builds off of that. What are your visions for a queer future?
The future is gay.
I mean, I sort of like, I feel like Brenda's vision for for this octopus future is part of my vision for a queer future, TBH, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Did y'all read that Rebecca Solnit book, Hope in the Dark? She talked at some point about how, like it's much easier to imagine apocalypse. It's much easier to imagine that the world will end, and actually harder to imagine that it might go on in all of the complexities that we might not be able to predict and understand right now. And I think remembering that it's actually a cop-out to only look at the future and see despair. The like, you know, overachiever student in me then is like, I will take that challenge of doing the harder homework. So I don't know what my vision for a queer future is. I think the thing that gives me the most hope, though, is the knowledge that there are possibilities that none of, like, not one person in this room has dreamed up, has, like, predicted.
Well, that's really nice.
And I will just add, like, I think each of you is doing work in, like, imagining in language, like, what that might look like, even a sliver of what that might look like, and that's part of, like, the work of poetry and the work of art. Did you want to
just
add
the
something?
Last thought? As I'm 32, please. So as like a queer elder, you know, I wanted to say, it's wild to go. Like, I don't necessarily believe in the structure of the child or like the childhood, but being at high schools and being around all these like radical ass kids, you know what I mean, who are like self-realized and actualized, and like, I don't make me feel, I guess I believe the children are the future.
They
very gay.
Okay, we have to end, but I just want to thank you all for attending. Thank you to these four fabulous, fabulous poets. Meet us at the book table. And have a fabulous day.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast from the Bay Area Book Festival. For more information and podcasts, please go to www.baybookfest.org.